This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello. Welcome to our podcast showcasing our latest endgame insights for DB pension schemes. My name's Anthony, and I'm a content manager here at L&G. In late 2024, we published our first Endgame Insights publication. Now, with an enhanced version around the corner, here's a sneak preview of what's new and how DB schemes are approaching the endgame options they have at their disposal. When we wrote the first report, funding levels had risen and schemes were in the midst of seeing the landscape evolve before their eyes. It wasn't just market conditions that were changing, regulatory change was also on the horizon. Now, just over a year later, we've not only seen schemes consolidate their funding positions, we've also received greater clarity from the government on future regulation, in particular around the theme of surplus extraction. So, with this backdrop of clear options, we're increasingly seeing our DB clients wanting to put the theory around their endgame options into practice. To discuss all this and much more, I'm delighted to welcome back our Head of Endgame Solutions, Matt Webb, to the podcast. So, if I can kick off with just asking you, if possible, what's new in the report, Matt? Why should readers tune in and want to find out about this second edition?
Well, we've taken the existing report that we issued before, as you mentioned, and firstly, we've updated it for new data points across the board. So that's overall insight as to funding levels in the DB market, as well as our predictions and expectations around pension risk transfer. We've added new sections on how to invest for run-on for the longer term, as you said, more about putting into practice the ideas of how we can invest going forward, as well as thinking about how it changes the buyout journey now that many schemes already have affordability sorted out. It's a question of how they execute. But also, we've brought this to life with the results of our new endgame survey, which I'm quite excited about.
Just picking up on the survey you mentioned there, Matt, could you offer a bit more detail on what it's asking and what the point of it was in the first place?
Yes, well, relating back to what you said at the beginning, Anthony, about the evolving market, we have seen higher funding levels. So the pension regulator's annual funding statement at the end of December 2024 highlighted schemes over 75% funded on a low dependency basis, over 54% funded on a buyout basis. We've also seen the pension regulator call for endgame planning across the market. Its guidance note in the middle of last year around new models and options in DB schemes set out the need to put out a plan for endgame. So what we wanted to do, we worked together with the Pensions Management Institute, and we were keen to survey trustees to see what their views were of this extra data.
And picking up on that data specifically, were there any highlights on what they said? Any new learnings for us as asset managers and pension risk transfer providers from that survey?
Well, I'm pleased to say that the survey high-level results were very aligned with what the regulator's been saying. So in our survey, over two-thirds said they were in surplus, over 50% of them on a buyout basis. And whilst there remains a clear majority of trustees that do intend to focus on insurance risk transfer as part of their endgame, I would say a meaningful group do intend to run on, whether that's for now, whilst they get ready, or for the longer term. And finally, I would say that surplus is a focus, recognising that this can be achieved through final settlement, through a buyout, as well as the potential to do that on an ongoing basis, subject to how the regulations evolve in the coming time.
Okay, so that sort of covers a bit more about the schemes that are running on. Appreciate there's an option there to potentially extract surplus as part of a buyout. Another key focus of the report, I know, is looking at schemes that have a clear intention to buy out, maybe over sort of 3 to 5 year time horizon. What would you say the report and indeed the survey highlighted and key messages from that pension risk transfer side were?
Well, three key messages came out of the survey. So the first was that when looking at buyouts and the focus on non-price factors really were around high-quality member experience, insurer financial strength, and then the credibility of a recognised brand with a strong track record. So it's all about execution. As I said earlier, the affordability question for many schemes has already passed. It's a question of how do I best do this? The second thing, I think, relates to smaller schemes. We've seen commentary in the market to suggest that in this market where so many schemes are well-funded, will they all be able to get to that endgame destination? But actually, for smaller schemes, we thought that the majority did not perceive their size to be an issue to transaction. And that plays out with what we're actually seeing in practice through the evolution of small scheme propositions, such as Legal & General's flow proposition, which is specifically designed to do that. And then finally, for those that have completed the buy-in, the question we wanted to know was what were their aspirations and hopes around how they might evolve to complete the full buyout, to reach full risk settlement. Well, there's a meaningful majority that are not necessarily meaning to do that in the short term. They're planning to hold their buy-in position for longer, perhaps whilst they do other buy-ins and or think about surplus extraction. But for those that are trying to get to that end point, around 34% expect to do that within 2 years, and around 41% within 3 to 5 years. And what this really highlights, which is what we're seeing in practice, is the increased focus on this post-transaction environment. It's not just about doing the transaction and getting the price and executing the buy-in. It's all the work that comes after that to get to buy out, to close down the scheme, and to get to surplus extraction.
Thanks, Matt. That's great. Just thinking about the terms buy-in and buy-out, I know that we've previously recorded a podcast on what do these terms actually mean. Just in summary now, could you perhaps just talk our listeners through briefly what the difference is between a buy-in and a buy-out?
Yes, sure. Of course, we can do that. So I guess the buy-in would be the stage that all schemes go through, stage one, which is to agree contractually to the risk transfer contract, i.e. to agree to pay a price or premium across for the insurance and to receive that insurance to receive benefits going forward. But a buy-in remains an asset of the scheme, and the scheme and the trustees and the framework around them remain responsible for paying benefits. When we get to buy-out, and all buy-ins can be converted to a buy-out at some point, it's the last step where we close out that transaction and then replace it instead with individual annuity policies for each member directly with the insurer. And at that point, the framework around the scheme, the trustees, the administrators, everything else, can be unwound so that the scheme can be wound up and then surplus can be extracted.
I see. Thank you, Matt. That's really helpful. So a buy-in is essentially a partial PRT transaction where the framework remains with the scheme, whereas a buyout tends to look at the whole thing holistically and then move the framework fully into the sort of insurance regulatory environment.
That's right.
So on surplus extraction, we've touched on it already a little bit. We've talked about how the fact that the clarity from the government has come on surplus extraction being a possible option for schemes. I know that we have a section in the report on surplus extraction specifically. Just as a bit of a precis to that, could we perhaps talk a bit about whether surplus extraction needs to happen via a buyout, whether it needs to happen via run-on, or whether it could indeed be an option under both scenarios?
Well, it's definitely an evolving framework for people to think about. I think you're right. The expected and tried and tested approach is to get to that final point of a buyout, wind up the scheme. At that point, recognize the surplus for certainty that the surplus exists at that point, and then to do something with it. And historically, that has largely been repaying that to the sponsor, subject to taxation concerns. I think where the innovation lies and where the regulator is quite clear in its guidance is how surplus extraction can also be used to benefit members, whether that's pension members of the scheme or of other pension members, for example, in a DC proposition. And I think we still need some innovation on that. So, for example, it's still not completely tax efficient to make extra payments to members unless it's a discretionary payment under the existing structure. It would be useful to see ways for the government to help support that, to make it easier for the service at the end to be shared with members at that point. I think more importantly is the evolution or expectation that maybe service is something you could extract on an ongoing basis, i.e. before you get to buyout. But how do you do that? Well, the question with the service, of course, is it's easy to measure, but it's not certain until the end. I mean, when you know that you've done the buyout, you know it's a service. Up until that point, it's just a number. It's just a measurement of what you think it could be. So I think the key question remains, and which the regulator is clear about, is how do you put guardrails in place to make sure that the surplus that you have really truly is surplus and it can be spent on something, whether that is spent on benefits for members through augmentation of benefits or through discretionary benefits or rights or otherwise, or through the repayment of that to a sponsor. I think a key question that the market needs to think about is intergenerational fairness. It would be tempting, for example, to say, well, surplus can only really exist if we have a large surplus against security, against future changes in the situation. But if you hold too much surplus, then current pensioner benefits might not be increased. Conversely, the other way around is you could pay extra benefits out now to current pensioners, but put future pensioners at risk should situations change. So trying to work out what that tipping point is, what that balance is, I think is important. And it will take market practice. But of course, it will be different for every single pension scheme, because a fundamental factor is the strength of the covenant and any covenant support and having a plan B should situation change in the future. And then once we've got a framework around that, and we know what we're trying to achieve, then the real question is, how do I implement it? Because we need to invest the assets with that framework. We need to invest with the aim of generating growth to create surplus, but also preserving the funding level so that we don't have that situation in the future. And trying to balance that risk-reward trade-off, I think, is important. And again, will depend on each scheme based on its objectives and, importantly, its covenant support. Now, this is something, as you mentioned earlier, we do touch on a bit more detail in the Endgame Insights report. And what we're really trying to work out is how can we learn from the benefits of being an insurance company ourselves, how to invest like an insurer, but also recognize that as a pension fund, you've got a much wider range of opportunities that you can invest in. And that's a benefit potentially to capture a different risk return profile for Endgame for the long term. But as I say, all topics that we discuss in more detail in the survey.
You mentioned there, Matt, about intergenerational fairness. I know that's something that's extremely important to L&G to highlight. You talked about it within the context of a DB scheme. Something that I know is being discussed is to take that intergenerational fairness discussion a step further and whether DB surpluses could actually also be used for DC schemes. I know that L&G as a company is raising awareness of the difference between DB schemes and DC schemes, how in many ways individuals need to consider increasing contributions into DC schemes to close the gap between the levels of pension provision that these schemes can potentially provide. Is DB surplus available for DC schemes? Is that something that could be potentially transferred in part to help reduce that gap between the generations?
Absolutely. I think it's another key area of innovation over the coming year. I think there's a wider question here about whether or not a significant surplus in the DB section can be used merely to fund existing DC contributions and expected contributions over time. So i.e. just effectively work as a balancing cash item for the sponsor here, or whether there's actually an opportunity for intergenerational addressment, if you like, allowing that surplus from DB to provide extra benefits, increased benefits, or increased opportunity for a DC population for the future. But that aside, I think there are also some practical issues. Moving assets from a DB section to a DC section when it's existing as a hybrid trust, i.e. where the same trustees manage and look after both sections, is usually not necessarily straightforward, but it's possible, subject to the trustee and rules and the guidance in there. What's a little bit harder is where schemes have, for example, a master trust for their DC section. That's separate to the DB environment. So trying to find a way to get money across from surplus in DB to a master trust is a little bit harder, but it's okay just as long as we can find a way to get it to be a recognized pension transfer. And that is something that we have been looking at in some detail across our DC business, and something actually that we've been launching new solutions on to help our clients to do that.
Thanks, Matt. That's really exciting to hear that the potential issue of intergenerational fairness has possible routes to being offset via the sharing of DB surplus more broadly. And actually, I'd like to flag to our listeners, there's actually a blog on our website currently discussing this in more detail. Just before we wrap up for today, Matt, I wonder if there's anything else you'd like to highlight from the report or indeed on the endgame options available for schemes in more detail.
Well, thank you. I think I'd just like to highlight that we're in a new environment of choice for pension trustees, that we continue to see innovation on how to support trustees in this journey for endgame planning. But all of them, they're really designed to improve outcome for members. Ideally, both the quantum and the certainty of payment over time. But we're definitely in an innovation environment. This is a new paradigm. It's changed from deficit filling to a situation where the majority, many schemes now are in surplus. Question is what best to do with it on an ongoing basis. So I think however you look at it, interesting times ahead. Watch this space.
Thanks so much, Matt, for joining us today. And thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning in. Please do keep your eyes peeled for the launch of our next edition of Endgame Insights over the coming weeks. And you can find all our content related to the Endgame options available for schemes at blog.lng.com/tags/Endgame. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LG Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.